This is Jughead's Basement, subcategory Lo-Fi Interviews with Hi-Fi Guests, episode 180 with returning guest Billy Brown. In this episode, me, Emily, and Sean engage in a conversation with Billy Brown about his solo project, Best of Tragedies, which has just been released for the first time on vinyl by Rare Bird Lit. Sean Harris is an award-winning creator of books for kids. His authorial debut, Have You Ever Seen a Flower, was called a stunning tour de force by the New York Times. The National Museum of Wildlife Art awarded Sean's cut paper art in A Polar Bear in the Snow the Bull Branson Award for Excellence in the Field of Children's Book Illustration, with a focus on nature and wildlife. His other books include New York Times bestseller The Eyes and the Impossible by Dave Eggers, and the best-selling First Cat in Space graphic novel series, which he created with his childhood best friend, author Mac Barnett. Emily Flake is an American cartoonist and illustrator. Her work has appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times, Time, and many other publications. Her weekly comic strip, Lulu 8-Ball, has appeared in numerous alternative news weeklies since 2002. In 2007, Emily won a Prism Award for her book, These Things Ain't Gonna Smoke Themselves. The song to begin this episode is called Sacrifice by Billy Brown off the aforementioned record, Best of Tragedies. Let's begin. Recording.
Yeah, it told me. The fucking computer narked on you, man.
Yeah, I know. There's no privacy. So what do you feel like you want to accomplish in this thing? And also once we get them on board here.
Well, I'm really proud of the record. Really happy with how it came out. Very proud of the artwork that was done through Emily and Sean's production of it and his work, both of them being very, very talented and established authors and such, and illustrators, pretty cool. And them coming out for me, I'm lucky. I'm lucky. I've got good friends that are was yourself included there. Always cool to work with and expand my horizons wherever I have. I think Sean is like phenomenal artist, musician, et cetera. And he really brought out the best in me, well more than I would have been able to. And Emily is fucking fantastic as an artist and a writer. She's also the funniest person I know, which is saying something because I'm friends with a lot of funny people. Yeah, because I'm wicked dark kid, you know.
What, so did Sean actually engineer that, or I know that Bice did some work too, but what is Sean basically?
Sean did the main deal, the main production. He sat with me at the beginning when I just had like a collection of the songs. Some were a lot closer than others, and kind of we went through and really talked about them. And he pushed me out of my comfort zone to play some stuff that I wasn't necessarily really comfortable with at the time. Because I was just like, I was gonna write a fucking punk song, dude. Fucking yeah. And it's like, and he's like, "What? This is a waltz." And I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" Okay, like weird, out of my realm. But I'm so proud of it now because it really shaped me in ways I didn't understand. And so he worked with me like all the time, forever, working on expanding these songs and fleshing them. And then when it got up to the point for me to record, he got me involved with his sister to fly out to LA and work in a studio with her for the main guitar, vocals, and stuff. And then after I returned back to Boston, he did all the recordings with me in different practice spaces and basements and et cetera, kind of flesh it out. And then when it got to the point where it was ready to mix, I had already contacted Bice, and then Bice kind of stepped in. And between me and Sean's ideas and me and Bice working together, and Bice's concept, kind of skewed it that way. So I'm really, really happy with how it turned out. Now that it's at 45 on vinyl. It really does. I'm excited for you to hear it because it really, there's like a low end and whatever fucking cliche bullshit, but like warmth and such that really comes from that 45 RPM and vinyl that it didn't really have before with the streaming. I think it's still good, but it's just the whole thing. It seems a lot more on purpose. Rather than like, I was like, "Oh wow, this sounds good, man." I was really, the great stuff falling into Rare Bird, BU and Semi-Famous, et cetera. Really meant a lot. Those guys are great, and I'm very honestly pretty honored to be associated with them. This all came from fucking like us making a fake band out of like this all just started out of nowhere, which is so cool, man. Especially speaking of what I've been going through and such, it's really pleasant, albeit morbid timing for this record, because the record itself is essentially about death. As I wrote it, it was like about my city dying and me not feeling that I felt there anymore, my marriage dying, my dad dying, et cetera, et cetera. And then of course, now I've got my own shit going on, so it's like it's definitely pretty bittersweet, but also kind of beautiful.
So one of the few credits I saw on the Rare Bird page, it's very simple. That's just you, Sean, Emily, and then your father is mentioned there as dedicated to the memory of William J. Brown.
I put both my dad and my mom because they both knocked off, but apparently they just put that because it was on the other thing. Then it's been a weird heavy, fucking crazy year, man. You know, as you know, because you know me better than most. Yeah, you know, finding out about this, like us coming together to work on Semifinals, you know, outside of this, like with there being no nothing involved, and then for it coming back to them being interested, and then me finding out that cancer and all this shit, like everything went fucking weird, man.
Yeah, man.
Really weird for the last year. You know, which all things considered, things are difficult. But as far as it goes, I'm in a pretty good place, which is nice. And I think, in large part, from being able to join up with you and your cabal, and and as well as doing this having this record released, between going to Chicago, between tracking this up, going to Chicago, working with you guys, and the record coming out, and actually getting some real appreciation for it, it made me feel like myself. I didn't for a very long time. You know, prior to, like, you know, I mean, I did it before because I was all strung on drugs and angry and fucking whatever. Got over that shit. And then, like, you know, thankfully, like, I had already really dealt with a lot of mental issues and substance use issues and such. So when COVID came, I was a lot better suited than I would have been. You know, I would have done poorly, very poorly before. And then with my knee being fucked up, and then et cetera, mom passing away, and then fucking get cancer, all this shit, you know, it's been like, been one hit after the other. But by and large, I'd like to cover out whatever time I have, but I am actually pretty happy with what I've done and who I am and what I've given to people for whatever it is.
Yeah. Let's get a little, we got a few minutes before they come in, but what was the, what were a few reasons for it to go from you working predominantly with bands to really digging into putting out like a solo thing? What was the impetus?
Well, I think in part it was very helpful that I've been playing in bands since the 90s, and mostly like hardcore bands, heavy bands, street punk bands, whatever, you know, heavy shit. And then I had kind of switched towards like writing a little bit some myself, and also this band Deadly Sins I did with Vice, which was a lot more melodic than anything I've been used to. And I also kind of bounced off you know, just band whoring, filling in for different bands, and kind of put me in a better place, I think, to be able to express myself this way. And you know, again, with Sean helping me, forcing me to do the weird shit, it felt right at the time. Like it felt normal. I didn't feel like I was faking it. I felt like I really thought about what I wanted to say and kind of thought about how it could be expressed. You know, I needed help, but and luckily I have really, really good friends. I have very good people in my life. I'm very lucky for that. You know, I had some very amazing musicians play on this because they wanted to help, you know. I ain't got no fucking money, you know. Like, nobody's like, oh shit, I'm gonna work with Billy Brown, I'm gonna make a ton of money, you know. that's not my MO, you know, like, you can scam on somebody maybe, but that's about it, you know.
Did you have specific ideas for songs, or did you just let some people just listen to all of it and have them decide what they wanted to do?
Yes, no, I kind of, like I'm saying, there was definitely like a fair amount of like the song Catastrophe, where Sean really forced me. I wrote it. It's a pop punk song. It is like it would be a pop-up song. It'd be a great Sonic Fan song. It's a great pop-up song, I think. And he forced me to do again Waltz, whatever fucking shitty fucking he brought up. But it's the type of thing. It totally, took me out of my comfort zone. Because, usually, you just bang on it and hit it hard and move on, it's kind of how I've always been. And instead, this was a lot more thoughtful, which is good, with it being that I wrote it during that time period, end of the 2010s, and, it was all released and finished, not released, but finished, by 2012, I guess, something like that. That one moved out here, was fucking done. And it's weird because I'm very proud of it, but it's I think it really came out at the right time, I think it sounds a lot better now than it did at that time. I don't know why. Maybe it's just my own recollection. I don't know.
Still all weaknesses by the neon light, and I'm such easy prey. Never learned how to say words I really mean. Set our communion, a placation of the grievances of the day. Was such easy prey, stuck in the in-between.
I'm bringing Sean into the room now. He's there on his iPad, so I'm gonna bring him in.
Hey guys, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm wearing a patch.
You look great, Billy. You look great.
I just gotta tell you guys. I love you guys so much. I actually got a new patch for today. Yeah. I had two patches in the box, and I was like, I have to be like, oh man, the thing is falling off. Like, I should get rid of it. I was like, I should save for Jughead. I'm gonna save the dude.
Is there actually a quality place where you get patches? Is there like a patch store or like?
My friend Danielle just ordered them off of Amazon for me.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
My things. I'm always discussing my daughter because I've always had a girl gang, and back in Boston it used to be like real hot, tough, like. Bitches that could fight like a motherfucker, could beat up dudes, and they were like my homies. And then like now it's like I have all of these like women that are very smart and businesslike and able to deal with doctors to help me with my new cancer stuff. So just keep moving on, just keep picking them up.
So Sean, welcome. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Hey, Jughead, good to meet you.
I don't know if we've met before. Probably not. I don't think so.
We have. But it's really cool to meet you.
Yeah, it was a good lead-in because me and Billy were just talking about we stepped on to bring in other musicians, but he gave the lowdown about you working with him to like push the songs in the new directions. But this is a while back now, right? Now we're talking 2000.
Yeah, we're testing all of our memories. I don't know if Billy told you about the record release at all yet. If you guys have trodden on that territory. It was an absolute trip hearing the LP from front to back, in like on proper club speakers. It was the loudest I've ever heard it. And obviously coming from the actual record master, it was the best I've ever heard it too. Or I guess comparable with the studios that we actually originally recorded it in. But since then, I've just been, you know, playing it like through my laptop while I'm working and stuff. So
yeah, I think that's what's really interesting. Billy was just touching on that too. To have something for so long, but never have it in the sort of the state of where, you know, he probably envisioned it to being finally on vinyl. And for people that know vinyl, they know that, yeah, they can hear the difference, the deepness, like Billy was saying, and the just how the it brings out a lot more of the qualities of it. Did it feel like, did it make you like proud again over the work you had done with Billy on it? Like, could you?
I've always been proud of this one. And the feeling behind this record is like, what a shame it is. No, not to put that burden on you, Billy, that, but just that it never saw its proper release, really. You know, it kind of trickled onto Bandcamp, disappeared. It was at a really difficult time, Billy, in your life when you were kind of moving coasts and picking up the pieces. It was like about that, but also everything kind of fell apart. It sort of turned to sand in your hands, and we just had this amazing record, but all of a sudden, for the first time in your life, you weren't on tour with five bands to promote it with. You know, like I felt that I've razzed you for 10 years about this record needing a proper release, because I think the songs are so damn good, but like I've always felt a little bit guilty about razzing you too because of everything you went through to make it.
Oh yeah, but you know, there was a concept that it was gonna come out at one point.
Well, how did it happen that you got Sean to work on it with you? Were you two just good friends already and then wanted to do that, or how did that
we became friends? He dated one of our best buds,
one of the members of his girl gang.
And she was like very insistent that me and him become friends, because I'm like her older brother or something. Like, I'm the one that protects her and shit, even though she can fucking protect herself. me and her were very close. So, when her and Sean kind of came into each other, she got really into playing Sean my stuff. And they had a very long drive across the coast. And I think by the time he came back, she had kind of broken him a bit. So we hung out, and he was like, all right, man, I hear it. It's cool. And I was like, okay, cool. And that's how me and him befriended each other. And, you know, one of my best friends, you know.
I showed up in Boston, and aside from Billy's friend who I was dating, I knew nobody. My dad was from Boston, so it was a little bit like, oh, cool, I'm going to go to, like, this, I'm going to move to this town where my dad is from and kind of get in touch with, like, my Boston, like, I have some extended family over there, and I was like, this will be great. And then I showed up there, and, you know, I was, like, I had just started a glam band, and so I was just, like, in a very purple sequins kind of phase, and I showed up, and I was like, oh, this is a hard town. I don't know how much like actual danger I was in, but you know, when you're getting sideways looks from every which way, you feel a little bit like, oh, should I tone it down a little bit? And Billy was like, don't tone it down. Come hang out with me. So
yeah. Yes.
what gave Sean, what gave you the, and sometimes it's not confidence, sometimes it's just the perception of confidence, but to think you could help someone, sort of model their music, their songs. Like, what gave you that confidence or that impetus to want to do that with them?
Yeah, I you know, it was an interesting time, you know, about, we're saying give or take 10 years ago that we were working on this, where kind of for the first time I was recognizing the tools that I had, you know, I'd been in many recording sessions, but like as a band guy, and really relied heavily on producers and engineers, mm-hmm. In professional studios with budgets from, you know, indie labels, etc. Like, and for the first time, like my laptop power, you know, I, along with a lot of other musicians, I was realizing like, oh, my processor can kind of start to handle some of these, you know, if I keep my sessions below 20 tracks, like, mm-hmm. I can kind of do this myself. I can kind of figure this out. So, you know, I noticed a lot of my songwriter and musician friends around me also kind of having this discovery. So I don't think it was unique, and probably a bit brash to think that we could just like go ahead and replace all of the, you know, the life, the achievements of the life achievements of all these engineers and producers that we had relied on for decades. But, you know, it was, you know, Billy had played in a bunch of punk bands and was like, and had these songs that were, the lyrics were just like so striking and well penned that I think the confidence came from like, well, we can kind of do if we can do a mediocre job on the production, then I think that the content of these songs will bring it the rest of the way to being acceptable. Mm. And then we actually ended up basically every favor that Billy had, every favor that I had to get Billy singing on high-end microphones to get it mastered at the same place that any other record was getting that. So we actually managed to pull together, like, I think, like a very great sounding record. But at the beginning, we were just kind of feeling our way into, cool, like, I know how to hit record and you know how to write a great song, so let's figure this out. Yeah. We took a long time doing it. It was not efficient.
Cars and old junkyards slowly rust away. Ruins. Crack concrete below opulent display. This prosperous we decay. Ruins. And like to think we'll see some better days. All these places home. Ruins.
Was there actual stages? Because, you know, I mean, Billy's has been mostly a band writer before that. And then, and even me having done even a Blackouts, there's lessons to learn about doing things now acoustic and how different it is. Did you experience those sort of pitfalls or like trying to understand how to construct something that's acoustic but still has energy?
Like at that point, we knew that the songs with Billy playing them on just an acoustic guitar were like gave me goosebumps. Like I knew that, and Billy knew that he was onto a group of songs that he had been protecting and not playing with this. You know, I'd kind of salvaged and saved these from in various stages of other bands. It's just like, oh, this one is just like, I can't figure out how to orchestrate this with this group or that group, or maybe, is that accurate, Billy? I don't want to like speak.
Yeah, no, I'd say so. Yeah, like I was happy. When I came in, like there was something that like I had a good feeling about, like being like very basic in their instrumentation and such. And then, as I said, like, you know, it's like things like Catastrophe and whatnot. You turn that from a Papa song into a fucking waltz or some shit. Like it's beautiful. I don't think I wouldn't have stepped that way. Out of myself, seeing it in hindsight, I totally understand it. And like, you know, maybe that's something maybe I would actually learn from perhaps in the future. If I were to write something, I'd be like, oh, let me try something like this. You know, at the time that really fucking, that it just blew my mind. Even to this day, just listening to that song is like, yeah, I think it's really the best song on the record, probably, you know?
I love that one so much. It's my favorite too. But yeah, I remember I didn't have your trust from the get go. I mean, you know, it took, why, you know, being afforded this sort of odd period of time where we had no deadlines and we were just making this record and feeling it out. You know, there were iterations of songs that, you know, were more filled out, had more instrumentation on it. We tried doing things more stripped down and then added instruments to them, took instruments off. And there was like, you know, the record kind of found its center when we got maybe six or seven songs into it. And I think you realized then like what the whole picture was.
Especially because like I was very happy because I'm not really into old punk dudes doing acoustic records generally. Like I really like even Blackouts, but that's like its own animal. But like all these fucking things for like the dude from Avail and blah blah blah, they all sound like fucking like commercials for selling trucks. It just sounds weird to me. Like it doesn't really have much heart. It's just like, it's just not my thing. So that's why I was really, in large part, like I really like the things, some of the things we expanded upon, because now I don't feel like it's that record at all.
We're never going to get a Ford endorsement.
Yeah. I don't drive, so I can crash things,
listening back to it, like I said, I could only have the digital now because I don't have the vinyl here in Japan, but I was paying attention to your strong playing, Billy, and it seemed to be both like dirty and clean at the same time, Sean. Like you can hear his picking, like all of it, which I love that sort of stuff, where, because that's part of the rhythm when you're doing acoustic, is like how you're playing it. So is that, did you have choices on how to mic that, or did you just got lucky with a lot of that, or did you?
Oh yeah. No, for sure. It was a concerted effort to keep the acoustic guitar and Billy's voice at the center, because just like, hearing those songs in the practice space, like it was very clear that was the heart of the song. We didn't want the record to feel like old punk guy does acoustic kind of thing, like Billy was just saying. But at the same time, his voice is so unique. I didn't want to bury it, but under walls of stuff, and like kind of for the first time, I wanted to hear like just every like little pothole and crevice in his voice. And so we wanted to keep things keep from burying that. And then the acoustic guitar, actually, the way that sits, the bass and treble kind of sit around Billy's voice. There's just like almost like a perfect mix of Billy playing in a room by himself. So it was really built around there. Like, what won't pile on top of that and destroy the clarity of that? I think that's the part that you hear that is very clean. And then we just sort of built each song around that as they demanded.
I'm so speechless, racing thoughts, unfinished ideas. I'll get to later if I get the chance. And they say it's only worth it if you want it. Well, wishes from the well are always ring so hollow.
Also, I think it definitely helped that you got me in, because Sean's sister engineered the vocals and the acoustic guitar out here in LA. So since the two of them they've kind of known each other for a while, it seemed to really understand each other. So Sean kind of telling her what he was aiming for, I think was able to resonate with her better than just a rando, I think she really kind of gets him, between the between them being able to talk really kind of I think went really well.
Yeah, which part of that, because you went to LA, we couldn't afford plane tickets for everybody to go. You went to LA to work with my sister. Were you a lot of the vocals?
I did pretty much all, I did all acoustic and.
Yeah. That's what we needed the good mics for.
And the Gibson I used, I forget what guitar it was, but it was fucking really nice. I definitely didn't use my usual Crummer,
And does she still have a studio in California, or what?
No, she's up in Portland now. At the time she was like fresh out of music recording school. Mm-hmm. So she was like, give me jobs. I don't care how much they pay. Just give me work. I need to like build my resume. But she also liked Billy's songs and understood it immediately. Yeah. But it was really easy to work with her. And I've played in a few bands with her as well. So we have a sibling shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would have felt really weird, really, about not having a plane ticket to go out and produce vocals with anybody else. I think I was at every other session that we brought in other engineers and players at. But yeah, that was when I was like, yeah, yeah, go with my sister. She knows what we need.
So now you're in California now too, Sean?
I am. Yeah. I grew up in Northern California and I just moved back.
Oh, you returned back.
So yeah, I lived in Boston. That's where I met Billy, briefly. And then for a couple of years, Billy, how long did we work on this record? It was over a year, I think.
Yeah. I'd say well over a year. Cause when we got together, I had like kind of the idea, the record mostly was written, but I needed help, you know. Definitely, it was kind of perfect timing because I think I had pushed as far as I could up to a certain point, and then I needed to work with somebody. You know, it was great. It was in certain ways humbling, and in other ways, you know, made me feel pretty good about myself. You know,
yeah. A lot of the favors that Billy like that we called in were people that Billy, I think that you would have. That, you know, you definitely had access to record this record with other people. And I think part of the appeal of working with me, Jughead was asking about like why I had confidence to think that I could produce this. But like, I think part of the appeal was like any other studio that was set up for, you know, to block off a schedule, you know, I'm sure a bunch of people would have given you a free 3 days or given you like pay 50% or like a really great rate, but like there's nobody else I don't think that would have been able to spend over a year figuring out what the sound of this record was with you, right?
Yeah No, it was very, you know, very specific, and like, you know, it's like it kind of coincided with you know, it's like our friendship growing, and you know, you and Val's like a relationship, and like it everything was pretty like kind of perfectly timed for, and I was, everything had hit the skids so much otherwise in my life that I was like, fuck it, I'll do some music, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in a town where I knew one person other than you, and she worked all day. I was trying to be an artist and figuring out how to record stuff myself, and then you were like, needed a place to go and escape all that and write about it. So it worked out really well.
Well, I'm curious now because, you know, any projects you can work on for that long and you're altering and you're working together, and then there's probably times where you're not working on it and then you're working on it again. Did it actually get to a point where you felt you were done, or did you have that like artist perfection where you could tinker with it all the time, or is it just ran out of time?
No, there was never a clock. And I want to say it's nice that you would assume that we would like put it aside, come back to it. But I've worked on it every day for a year or more.
Yeah.
I think we were pretty drained by the end of this. So we're just like, it's good, man. It's better than we thought it would be. It's just cool, you know?
If we weren't working on the record actively, we were drinking PBRs, listening to what we had done.
Yeah. So I still stick to my question, though. Did you feel like it was done? Like, did you know it was done?
I'm nodding right now, which is great for podcasting, but I'm waiting for Billy to say, because he's the artist.
I'm really trying to stick to the question of, like, did you feel like it was done? Because you work on a project for that long, it becomes part of your life. Did it actually feel like you were done when you finished working on it?
I think, yeah, I think we were at that point, it had already gone well above and beyond what I expected anyway. Like as far as the amount of effort that people gave to me and work and health. So by the time we were kind of feeling like it was wrapped up, we're like, all right, that's cool. We're good. You know, we do what we can do. You know, like I think at that point I was just like, I've worked harder on this record than I have on any record before. So like, this is about the top of my cleanliness and godliness. You know?
Yeah.
What was the last song that we added to the record, Billy? Do you remember? Like, what? There's always that sort of like cherry on the top song that kind of lets you know that it's done.
Yeah, I think it was probably Best of Tragedies.
Best of tragedies always end this way, but it's still fine. Break your fingers.
I think that was the last thing I wrote, which was very fitting because, you know, it's the darkest song on the record and kind of pulls the record together, I think. And obviously became a lot more. At the time, I was writing it for my ex-wife. And, you know, now with the way my life's gone and things, now I'm like, oh, shit, I wrote this for me, I guess. Fuck. I didn't really mean to. I should have written something better, like, hey, you want a lot of money or something, you know. I should probably think of these things, but yeah, you know, it's again, you know, listening to it's pretty dark, which is funny. I'll say real quick before Emily gets on, when she did the art for this, like in the back cover, it's got this long beard guy, and it says forget at the bottom. And it looks how I looked when I moved to LA. I worked at Thirsty Crow and all this shit. And it looked like that. And I remember the front cover, she had this bald guy. And I was just like, I'm not fucking bald, dude. Like, but like, you know, Emily's cool. She's a great artist. So I'll just work with it. And then fast forward years later, when this actually gets, you know, signed or whatever. And I'm in the process of having, you know, Sean go through and help do the layout for Emily's art. We're both just like, holy shit, I have chemo now. I'm going bald. I'm bald. Holy, she's a fucking witch, man. She doesn't fucking know. Like, fuck, I should have had her do something better for me. Like, you know.
Billy, you keep on using the phrase better. You're like, I should have written something better. I should have had her do something better. I know what you mean, but there's nothing better than this, what you made, man. Oh. I mean, I know what you mean. More positive, maybe.
Yeah. More positive. Yeah. Yeah. So that's as far as I can go.
Hello, Emily.
Hey, hi. I am so sorry.
No problem.
It's just me living up to my name.
Yeah, we got to talk to Sean for a while, so it kind of worked out nicely, actually. So
nice.
And he actually just brought you up, just started talking about the art. So
super.
Yeah, I was saying how it was. I think we talked about this before, but how it was funny because at the time when you made the original artwork, I was just like, "That's weird. I'm bald. This is fucking weird." And then when I signed, I was going through chemo, and I was just like, "I'm fucking bald now. Holy shit, Emily's a witch. She fucking figured this out." Oh my god. And you know,
I'm a witch who used the powers to give you cancer.
Thanks, yeah. Man. Thanks.
I am truly God's own asshole.
Hey, yeah, you also gave him a really great beard on that back cover though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of, Billy, you ruled Silver Lake with that beard for a good handful of years.
Yeah.
Iron fist, you know.
So how did Emily, let's do it that way to get her talking. How did you meet Billy? Like, how did this come to be, you doing the work for
him? I've known Billy since I was a literal child. Wait, Billy, I'm going to say we went to high school together, but actually, did we?
We did, but I was a few years older.
Okay.
Much shadier.
Yeah. So we grew up in the same like punk rock scene. And as I tell this story, if you're like, don't tell that story, just be like, shut the fuck up, Emily. But I'll start telling it because I didn't share this with you previously. I knew Billy, you know, from around, went to shows, et cetera, et cetera. And then I think when I was like 17, which would have made you 19 or 20, probably, is that math up? We were at a house party and I was saying, you know, I was making my goodbyes. You came out, you tried to kiss me. I said, oh, I'm sorry, I have a boyfriend, which in retrospect, fucking lame boyfriend, but beside the point. And you said, yeah, sorry. And then he said, what about your friend Amanda? Can I get her number?
Yeah, and then I married Amanda.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. No, I recall.
So, what a trajectory that was.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the that was nice. So like, yeah, we've been, we've obviously, you were in Baltimore forever and New York, obviously. Mm-hmm. And we kind of reconnected, whatever years ago. And then I was really lucky and very happy for you to work on this. And I'm told, I got no compulsion, compulsion, words are weird. But I got nothing to say here, but I do think you actually are my funniest friend, Emily. And I'm friends with so many funny people.
Ouch.
I was going to say, I'm going to need to know who the rest of your friends are before I decide if that's a compliment or not. For all I know, grips.
I'm not saying they're all good people.
me and Jughead will just be over here, guys, if you want to just...
We'll just be all serious in the background.
Right. Am I funnier than Jeff Ardiaco?
Yes. Yes, you're not as much of an asshole as Jeff Ardiaco. And he's really good at being a funny asshole. Uh-huh. So, different people will step in different things in different ways, but...
That's it.
But town to town.
It all contain multitudes.
There's so many times, you're saying something like, Jesus Christ, I'm like, you, that's harsher than I would have said. That's fucking...
It's that milkmaid face of mine that...
Yeah, it's disarming.
Yeah.
Billy, did you approach her to do the art specifically, or was it just came up in a conversation when you two were talking or what?
Yeah. I had when the thing was together and Emily had done some artwork for it while I was getting it done, some stuff that I was able to use for t-shirts and fucking an old CDEP thing I toured with. And some other things, and that's when I talked to her about doing lino cuts, very specifically for this concept, this release, this record, I'm so happy now that it's on vinyl and it looks nice, and actually is presented properly, because you fucking go to band camp or some shit, it's like, cool, but you don't feel it, It's like holding it, actually kind of.
It looks so good.
Yeah, it looks really good. Yeah, I was wondering about I'm curious about the technique. It almost looked like a wood cutting, but what is that, Emily? What is the art?
Oh no, I am way too lazy to do wood cut. It's lino cut. So the same basic principle, but linoleum's much, much easier to cut into. You cut the block. And then you can print it by just putting the paper on top and rubbing it with a spoon or whatever works. I still actually have all the blocks still from, what did we do this 15 years ago?
Yeah.
As you can tell, I am kind of a hoarder. So, but I also still had the digital files that I sent. So the takeaway here is never throw anything away ever.
Yeah, no, I was real scared about this entire thing. Once it was oh, wow, this is actually going to get put out. I was like, I have to talk to people now and fucking figure out where the stuff is. Luckily you had stuff, and luckily, Sean, was able to fucking help me with the design and stuff, so to kind of stop it all together and whatever. But at the time, I was like, I hope this works, And I was lucky in this sense.
Well, Emily, had you heard the songs already when you started doing the artwork, or were you in your own bubble as to what you were going to do? Was there a discussion about it? Do you remember?
I'm trying to remember. I think he might have sent me the songs. I also might have just been going purely on vibe.
Yeah.
I just kind of figured. Yeah. I know what he's putting down here.
Yeah, Emily gets it.
I think we established you had those wild visions of the next 15 years of Billy.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I knew I had to speak his cancer into existence.
Yeah. I had your goals.
You already earned the funniest friend thing. You don't have to keep throwing barbs,
No, it's a constant battle.
Yeah.
But yeah, you definitely sent me the track listing, and I think I just kind of maybe some lyrics I kind of pulled from that.
Yeah, I definitely sent you some stuff, and also we had enough history together that, like, you know, kind of we knew each other's MO and stuff. Really strange that everything kind of panned out how it did, which is nice.
Did you live in LA yet, or were you still in Boston then?
We finished it in Boston, and then I moved to LA, like, right away.
Right.
So, like, probably 2012 is when I got here. And I think towards the end of 2011, it was finished.
Right.
But, you know, I had some management that wasn't going that great. It's a nice person, but it wasn't working. Then I moved out here, and I was supposed to, move out to L.A. to get my shit together and do stuff. And instead, I just worked at a bar and did cocaine, so I didn't really do
shit.
Is that
what L.A. is for?
I remember telling people, like, because, you know, I was doing lots of drugs back in Boston by the time I left. And I remember talking to some friends of mine and being like, yeah, you know, it's going to be nice, man. We're going to get to L.A., you know, calm down, you know, work out stuff. And everybody's like, you're going to Los Angeles, dude.
Had you been to L.A. or seen any movies set in L.A. or spoken to anyone who'd ever been to Los Angeles before?
I've been here a bunch of times on tour. Uh-huh. Like, I was very, like, it never went. It was always seedy.
Right.
Like, I always did something sketchy. So I don't know why I thought I'd change, but...
Maybe it would be so much in front of your eyes that you had no choice but to look away.
Yeah.
From the drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe in your heart, you just wanted to do a lot of cocaine.
Mm.
I think that's really what it came to. It's like, you know, I just wanted a pep, you know?
Emily, a lot of the work that I've seen of you that I've inhaled in the night or two, a lot of it seems like you drive both the words and the images. Is it normal for you to take on a commission where you're drawing for someone else, or is that more difficult for you to do? Or
it depends. I do a fair amount of illustration, but I'm more writing and cartooning, especially at this point. When I first started out, I was doing more like straight illustration work, so like getting an assignment, getting the, you know, the thing, and then creating the art for it. But yeah, at this point I do much less illustration and more cartooning and writing.
So when Billy approached you, it wasn't out of character for you to just do something for someone else's conception?
No, wouldn't that be weird though? If it was like I'm an accountant, but sure, I'll make some sad art for your sad record.
Yeah, you're bummed out. Yeah. Right?
Give me a few years. Let me learn the craft, and I'll get back to you. But no, it was very much in my wheelhouse of things that I did. Billy, I don't want you to feel weird about it, but you're not like the only record cover I've ever done.
No, now you know.
It's more.
I feel so cheap.
Yeah, well, wouldn't be the first time.
No, I'm very cheap. It's cool.
I can't remember if you were saying when this is released, this interview, whether you have been telling people publicly about the cancer. Is this more of a... Oh,
this is actually the first time I've spoken publicly.
Yeah, yeah.
My MO has been my friends know. You know, my close friends know. And they're totally allowed to tell whoever that might need to know or want to know. But in general... I haven't spoken publicly about it, in part because I wanted to see how things went and not like to, I didn't want to fucking talk to people. You know, people were fucking annoying. Mm. It was like, you know, they're fucking boohoo bullshit. I don't need to fucking, you know, I'm not here to make somebody fucking feel better about my cancer. Like, they should figure their own shit out. But it's gotten to the point now where, you know, I have lung cancer and, it's doing okay, I guess, for right now. It's not getting worse at the moment, but the cancer seems to have spread to my brain somewhat, which I'm getting an MRI for with contrast and stuff, so they'll be finding out better about maybe there's a possibility of I have MS or something, or just through immunotherapy, it just kind of looks all fucking weird in the head. But, you know, I can't really see very well. Can't type very well. My balance is kind of fucked up. I'm using a cane. I'm like a fucking diseased pirate. But it's kind of gotten to the point where, honestly, now that I'm fucking selling a record, like, fuck you, buy my record. I've canceled. you know, like fucking, you know, I'll say cool bucks out of it. It's at a point now where it's so very obvious. Before, I pretty much just looked normal. You know, I was bald for a while, but otherwise I looked normal. Whereas now, me walking around, you know, walking down the streets and stuff with a cane and eye patch and stuff, it's very noticeable. And now that, you know, there's been, I'm not really fucking with social media or anything anymore because I can't really use my fingers for shit. So I have friends that they'll post like Team Billy Brown stuff, whatever, to kind of help me push things. But, you know, now more people have started to see in the wild, like images of me with an eye patch and stuff. So people are starting to ask about it, you know, and, you know, I just kind of figured, I think I waited long enough to actually speak about. And I'm also in, like I was saying, I'm actually in a fairly good place. Not a good place, but mentally and emotionally, I'm feeling very lucky, very fortunate for the people I do have in my life, the people who look out for me, and you know, the type of people that help me with things. And you know, I do feel very loved, and I'm very lucky in that sense. So I'm okay with it, man. You know, and also I've done a lot of fucked up shit, but by and large, I've helped a lot of people, so I'm okay. You know, that's kind of where I've been sitting at lately. Is I'm feeling pretty okay as far as it goes. as shitty as things are, I feel pretty good. You know,
but I want to ask it's not the hard question, but it's the question that's like, ooh, let's turn this cancer into the story of this record. But I do feel like you even said to me that you talk a lot about death and tragedy in it, and then now you're dealing with it more directly instead of like about other people that you said a lot of the songs were about. Do you actually tangibly feel a difference in how you're looking at those lyrics? Like, do you actually sit there and think about how it relates differently to you?
I do, actually. It's weird. I try not to be like too heavy-handed about it, but everything does touch me much differently than I saw it before. Really, really kind of, this was supposed to be like a very specific piece of my life. And now it kind of seems like it's kind of grown into where my life is now. Through, you know, I think sometimes I probably, you know, it's more intentional for me to think that way. But it does kind of register a lot more these days with everything. And just all this memento mori bullshit, you know, and you sit around and you actually think about death and dying and what, you know, pittance you left and whatever you've done for people. It definitely puts a lot into perspective, you know, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not miserable. I'm not fucking crying myself to sleep. I'm not fucking doing anything. I will sit and have some pretty, pretty heavy thoughts, think about some pretty dark stuff or some very, you know, stuff that takes a lot of concentration or thought. But I'm not feeling it that way. I'm feeling, by and large, I wake up and I'm kind of happy with myself. Also, I used to hate myself. You know, I was strung on drugs constantly, and I just wanted to die. Honestly, I died once, 14th. That couldn't kill me. You know, who knows what's going to fucking kill me. The fact that I had already been through a lot of work between therapy and me changing my lifestyle and, you know, substance abuse and such, it really put me in a place where I'm able to handle the shit, you know, because like when my mom passed, I wouldn't have been able to handle that a couple years ago, but I'd already kind of worked through things. So I was in a place where I could really deal with it. Just get me out before the sun falls. Now we're only gone. Just get me out before the sun falls. Now we're only gone. I'll be good, I won't stand then. I won't lie, we'll cheat or sin. Till I say the fuck up again.
And forgive me if you covered this before I got here, but like, why, what was it about this specific album that you're like, this is what needs to see the light of day? You know, like if this is, if you're at a point where it's like, you know, time might be of the essence, like, was this, was there a reason that this was like a particular like thing you needed to get out?
I think two reasons. First and foremost, I thought like it in some manner, you know, and I can't speak for what other people think of it, but for myself, I thought it actually is kind of important due to the what I'm going through and how much it like coincides with myself and the life. And also because I had so many people come through, you know, yourself, Sean included, come through and work so tirelessly, so hard for no money because I'm fucking poor. Like to help me with this thing. So many fucking friends from bands, you know, people that make really good money otherwise, but they just wanted to help. So I really always felt like it was unfortunate that I wasn't able to follow through for what everybody had done for me, you know? And when I got the opportunity and the label Rarebird publisher, when they started talking to me about it, I was like, oh God, wow. Fuck it, man. Let's do the record, you know? And they said, okay, you know, like, it was fucking great. So, I'm lucky in that sense too.
Well, I think our weird combination of, you know, you and I have been friends for a while, but when I came out, we decided to work on this weird semi-famous project. I think my instinct to want to get different people that may not have worked together before working together, I think also helped introduce like Tyson to you, like people that had never heard your voice before, or I think re-sparked a little of interest in at least people I know that, we're excited to hear something.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like the fact he had actually, because you had turned him on to me, he had gone and researched me. And so when I met him at the studio, he had already listened to the record and really loved it. And so obviously like I did have to talk about like what the specifics were and, you know, the money and blah, blah, blah. But I didn't have to pitch him, you know, like he was already, once I was like, yeah, I'd like to do this, and blah, 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 he was down. It wasn't like, oh man, check this out. And like, who knows if this person will actually listen to it or not, or whatever bullshit, you know? It was like, he was actually totally on. So that was cool, man. Cause I didn't feel awkward and weird. Like he made me very comfortable.
Billy, I don't really have much more, but I liked what Emily, that you threw out a question. Does anybody have questions for each other? I mean, this is one opportunity where, whether it's me supporting Billy with the project or you two working on it, it seems like a cool moment to just have all you together. So I don't know if there's stuff that you wanted to say to each other or to question.
I mean, this is the classic, like, does anybody have a question? And then I have a comment, but and I can't think of how to pose it as a question, but I think that like to piggyback off of Emily, what you just asked about why this record felt important, like it's also, I think maybe of note that of all the bands, Billy, that you had played with and toured with and written songs with, this was also the first time that you put out a record and the artist was your name. Like, I remember you kind of like wringing hands about wait, do I sell shirts that say Billy Brown? Is that weird? Like, and you always had
this... I was so annoyed when you were going to do my name.
Well, I know, and I think that you always
it's
had...
It's a great name, and I was like, yeah, it's a great name for a fat guy in country music, you know? Like, that's like every fucking guy in the video is Billy Brown.
If you search the record on Spotify, you have to scroll past a few of those guys before you see the album cover and find your record. But, like, yeah, I think that's also part of why so long to, like, release it, because you were alone. You were kind of, like, it was a autobiography, and it was kind of the same kind of cagey way that you're, like, I guess I can't really hide that I'm getting treatment for cancer right now. It was just sort of, like, this is very personal. And we spent so long making the record, and you brought your closest friends in on that process, me and Emily and a bunch of other people that were on the inside. But then when it came time to put that out, you were like, oh my God, but that's me. That's Billy Brown. And I think that felt really weird to you.
It did. Even like touring or playing shows, to be like, hey, so I'm Billy Brown, and there's Joe, and there's Deirdre, and there's other people here. I mean, I know it says me, but there's other people. I would not sound as good if they were here. Like, I don't know. Fucking weird, yeah.
Like, your name. Ew, Billy, you're hurt.
Anyway, that's part of I've given you shit about not putting out the record for 10, 15 years. We're having trouble figuring out exactly when we made this. But I've always like loved the modesty that that was underlying that was always part of why I've always loved you too, you know? I mean, it's just, I prod at you, but I also know that that is essentially Billy Brown. I'm so glad it's out now, and it does feel like essential that your autobiography got published.
Yeah, thanks, man. It does mean a lot, you know? I try not to sap on too much, mm-hmm. but it really is great. You guys don't mind, can you guys tell me what you each got going on? Like, so you got the next Cat in Space book coming out?
Yeah, it's directed to me. Emily, I've stepped into your field. I make comics too and write. But for kids, yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Isn't it horrible?
For the children.
Less autobiographical than maybe you and Billy are doing. Mine's about a cat in space eating pizza, but you know.
Truly, is not all art autobiographical on one level?
We have the book has just to finish the self promotion that you started. Thank you, Billy. You didn't have to do that. The book has a record. So that's if you want to hear my latest production, there is a record that goes with it. Maybe your 6-year-old will like it. Cool. Next.
Cool. I'll have that in the links. Emily, what's your current project too that you're working on?
I have a book coming out on Halloween. It's a creativity deck about how to write and draw jokes. And I am putting on a comedy festival in Williamsport, New York, which is where I have this house that I run as a writing residency for women in comedy. So that's also in October. It's going to be busy in October. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
The only time I've met you is when Billy took me to your show in LA, and I was like one of 30 people that like wanted, you know, to shake your hand after the show. You were so funny. It was great. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
At Nerd Melt, right?
Yeah, Nerd Melt. That's no longer there, but yeah.
With that Pee-wee's Playhouse that was guy so much fun. Or whatever. Great. He did art for Fred 62, where he was
Wayne White, right?
Wayne White, yeah. Yeah, and Mimi Pond. I think Liam McEnany had put that show together. Lori Kilmartin, well, Jesus, why do I remember this? Or maybe
that show was so good.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Billy, is there any more steps in the record? I know that Rare Bird is pretty much like a hands-on, you know, they have budgets for like putting stuff out, but then it's almost in the hands of the people themselves to get it out there.
Pretty much. Well, they were kind of like when I talked to like I went in for a meeting and I was like, hey, so this is great. Like, I'm going to talk to your press lady and all this stuff. And I'm like, so like, what should we do? And what's going on? And they're like, you called this meeting, dude. And I was like, what? They're like, you, we're here for you. And I was like, they're like, so what do you have to say? And I was like, I haven't drank enough coffee or anything to really talk right now. Okay. And then there was a lot of like, well, hit up your people and push it. It was awesome, you know, having, you know, you doing this show again, and Sean and Emily, you guys being part of it, you know, trying to, you know, hopefully I can get some of your people to maybe even listen to the record sometime. but it was like, kind of like, I was like, I played like hardcore thrash bands, man. Like a lot of my people aren't turning over from this. Like, you know, it's like I can have some of the punks like be a pitch it, but it's, you know, not going to be the same thing. I really don't know who to sell it to, buddy. like you guys are book people, you know, you can figure it out, right? You fancy verbers. they have been great. They're very happy about us pulling this together. And
One of the things that I think is cool about it being almost on a lit label is that I think people that buy it probably actually pay more attention to the words than you would like selling a normal record at a, like on a record label.
Yeah. I'm really proud of the lyrics. So I'm like, oh, it'd be cool if somebody actually reads it. <you know>? Or they're like, oh yeah, there are words on the paper, you know, it's fine.
At the listening party, it was really neat. So looking around the room and just seeing everybody with their lyric sheets out, like flipping them inside the,
cool. That is really neat.
The listening party went fantastic, man. I was very, very happy and surprised by how many people came out and how into it everybody was, listened, and, you know, like fucking applauded and shit and bought records and fucking people, like, because the whole time I was just like, okay, well, this song, people are going to leave for this one. You know, they're going to go smoke a cigarette or fucking get a beer or something. And I'm like, they're still in there. It's so weird. Like, you guys are like hanging out. Like, I'm not going in there because it's weird, but I'll stand outside and be like, look at you guys. That's nice.
One funny thing that happened was when we dropped the needle on the record, everybody forgot that the record is pressed at 45.
Yeah.
It was like chopped and screwed down. We're like, whoa, Billy's voice is gnarly, but this is like heavy.
It's like, yeah, I was like, I think this is wrong, man.
He was being all modest in the other room, you know, like didn't want to like get in people's like face as they're listening to his music, because we all know that's a nightmare when the songwriter's watching you listen to their song. So he went like right around the corner, and then so he like came in with his cane, like waving his cane in the air, like, oh, 33. 45.
Then, and then she changed the speed, but my friend Holly lowered. But she flipped the record, so I was like, "It's actually the wrong side now." I can't believe we had to start this again. Like, sorry.
But then actually, the record finished, and everybody went out to smoke. But like those who stayed inside listened to it like three more times on repeat. It's so good. It's so good.
No, what I wanted to ask, and you know, is. It, like the trajectory of your life in the past 5 years or so, just like the unexpected kind of like turns that it's taken. Is that something that you are or even want to like write about, speak into a recorder about, like, you know, like, is that something that you want to like put into something, or are you just still like, I'm just living it and still processing it? Like, shut up, Emily.
I think I'm at a point where I could and would enjoy to do that. For a very long time, it was too close to like too fucking on top of me.
Sure.
But I've had enough time where I've been able to kind of, I guess, process the different things I've gone through, where it's not as bleak and scary, I guess. Like, I could, I'm not at a point where I really know what to say, but right. I think I'm at a point where I'm ready to try to figure it out.
I think the thing that really strikes me, like every time that I've really talked to you since you, like kind of since you've gotten sick, has just been like, I'm going to be so gross here. The grace that seems to have descended on you in terms of like, you know, like your outlook and the acceptance of it. Obviously, you know, I'm not with you 24 hours a day, so I don't like, I don't know what your dark periods look like, but you know, like you said, this is happening to a different Billy Brown than the one I knew 10 years ago, you know?
Oh yeah.
And yeah, you know, that's something. So yeah, I mean, it is really like a remarkable trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah. My hope is, cause I'll be going into, I'm going to be starting either, either radiation soon or something similar thereof, which may help me, according to them, I don't believe anything until it happens. Cause people are just full of shit, but hopefully it's going to help me, come down from some of the issues I'm dealing with my eye and my hand and such, which would A, mean that I could type, so I could actually write something, and B, really hopefully, because there's possibilities of some tours and some cool stuff with me and Jughead and whatever, to play, to be able to like play, because I played in Chicago, we did a couple shows together. And it, you know, I got through it pretty good, but it was a lot of work, and I need to do that same work again. There's a lot to do, I definitely feel like I'm starting to get to a point where I might actually be able to say something that is worthwhile.
One of the things, Billy, I remember before this even went down, that I think you had, I wouldn't even want to say struggling, but it seems more like experimenting with trying to figure out like your format, like a lot of us that are creative in many different aspects. It seems like you're still trying to figure out what kind of content you want to put out, you know, like, and it's.
Oh yeah. I remember me and you talking about that. Like I got really into like drawing for a while and stuff. And I was like, So this is my new thing. You're like, all right. Okay. You're drawing dad jokes on comic strips. Like, you know, and now it's like, now you have a comic strip about fucking, about you and a little bag of cocaine that's your friend.
Yeah. So to me, sometimes that's the hardest part, is trying to figure out, even though you have the what you want to say in, you know, or the stories, how do you want to present those? That seems like sometimes a difficult battle.
Yeah. There's also like things I'd like to be able to do that I'm just not quite equipped for, not quite talented enough, or you know, haven't invested enough time in it. Yeah. You know? It's not like art and stuff, like that's just like something I really enjoy doing, but it's not, it takes me a long time to do anything. You know, like I had to really put my mind to it in order for anyone to look at it like it's a normal person that just like doodled something, you know. A big part of this is like between Semi-Famous and the record and stuff now, I'm feeling a lot, in general, a lot closer to you and adjusted with music again, which I wasn't for a long time. You know, like I didn't really feel like myself out here for a very long time. You know, I was just kind of fucked up all the time. Just, you know, I did my various little spiels and bands or filling in for different stuff, but, it wasn't anything serious. I didn't really. It wasn't how it used to be, you know. And now, I feel like I'm a bit back to myself, which is nice. Yeah, you know? Nice knowing yourself again a bit. Yeah.
Well, thank you all for participating in this, and I know we all appreciate Billy's work, and we love helping him out. So.
And seriously, thanks all three of you. Like, I love you guys. As I said, I am very lucky with my life and the help and the care they've given me. You know, and I don't forget that. So,
it was an honor to have been a part of this. So, thank you.
So, thank you. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Emily. All right.
See you again, Emily. Thank you, Jughead. Bye, Billy.
Bye.
All right. Thanks, guys. Love you. Down that street,
There's a burned out house next door to mine, but I didn't do it. It's okay, I get that question all the time. I feel under suspicion from the people in the cars or slowly by, but I'm just a sitting, smoking cigarettes and killing time. I always pretend not to care, but they can see right through me. I'll be the first to break this stand. Ashes on cement stairs. I always pretend not to care, but they can see right through me. I'll be the first to break this stand. I've been bedding down for the longest time, but no one is talking. Yet everybody seems to be doing fine. I feel under suspicion from the people in the house next door to mine, but I'm just sitting, smoking cigarettes and killing time. I always pretend not to care, but they can see right through me. Ashes on cement stairs. I always pretend not to care, but they can see right through me. I'll be the first to break this stair. Ashes on cement stairs. And I bet you're always right. You don't gotta tell me twice. I'll be the first to turn to ashes. And I know you're always right. You don't gotta tell me twice. I'll be the first to turn to ashes, 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 ashes.
Thank you for listening to this special episode of Lo-Fi Interviews with Hi-Fi Guests. If you are interested in any of the links or information about Sean or Emily or Billy, it should be in the show notes or on the website www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com. Up next, we will have the return of Polly Van Dam, a follow-up interview where we discuss her activities since leaving the Bomb Pops, her new band, working with my band Semi-Famous, and then we have a visit from Billy Brown, where we all talk about Semi-Famous and our shows in Chicago. I also want to say that I am saddened by the news this week that we lost another musician and Chicago legend, John Kesdy. I might write a little something about it next week for the next podcast. But right now, I just wanted to say, man, that sucks. If you're looking for an old new band to listen to, please look up The Effigies. You won't be disappointed. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves and take care of each other.